Okay, so we're going to go to a meditation retreat for the next few days. So I'm going to begin by saying a little bit about the meditation. Is that okay? But first of all, for a long time now, many people have called meditation concentration. And I want to make very clear from the beginning, that was a very poor translation of the word in Pali called Samadhi. Meditation never means concentration. So the next few days are not going to be a concentration camp. So this is going to be fun and happy. Instead of concentration, the word Samadhi is much better translated as stillness. And when I've been teaching overseas in places like Hong Kong and Singapore, my Chinese students, who are very knowledgeable in the equivalent of the Pali Nikayas, and it's called the argument in Chinese, and they sort of commented to me that it's so accurate, because in the Chinese characters the word samadhi is translated by two terms. One is called guan, which means looking on or observing, and the other one, which I probably mispronounced, shu, means, again, stillness. It means looking on, being still. And once one starts to get a more accurate translation of what meditation means, observing, which is your mindfulness and stillness, rather than concentration, it does change the whole practice of your meditation. Because concentration is something you do at school. Concentrate! Teacher used to say. And it became something very forceful and also fearful, which took a lot of effort, which meant you would never find stillness at all. And in order to make this very clear to you, there's a little demonstration which I will do straight away. And I'm going to need you as my accomplice in this. Now I'm going to hold my glass of water perfectly still. Is it still here or is it moving?
It's moving.
Okay, so what should I do? I'll concentrate. Has it stopped moving yet? Did you notice when I started concentrating, it started moving more? So I'm really going to go for effort in this time. Has it stopped yet?
Nope.
Now this is how many people meditate. They try and hold their mind still. And it doesn't get still, they put more effort in, and it moves even more. And they meditate for years and years and years, and never find any benefit in meditation. Because they don't know how to keep their mind still. So how can I keep this glass of water perfectly still? It's very easy. Put it down and let it go. It's so easy, no effort at all, so simple. Now, is that water stop moving yet?
Yeah.
Perfectly still.
Yeah.
That's so easy. When you stop holding things and put it down and let it go and have no effort and just watch and be still. In Chinese, the guan shu, samadhi. Observe and be still. And then you'll understand why we meditate. For those of you who keep using a water simile, for those of you who think about, well, it's okay being still, but you know, what does one see, the inside part of meditation? If you can imagine a lake in the mountains, whenever there is waves on the surface of that lake, can you ever see a good reflection of the moon and the stars at night? Even when there's ripples on the surface of the lake, you'll find the image of the moon and the stars will be distorted. It's only when that lake is perfectly still, when there's not even a ripple on the surface of the lake, only then will you have a true image of the moon and the stars above. In the same way, only when your mind is still will you have an insight to see things as they truly are. That's why, for those of you who know your Pali, it is Samadhi Pachinyangata Uttiyamadasana. From stillness, you see things as they truly are. Now, I have to every now and again quote Pali, because too often people say, oh, Ajahn, you just tell jokes. You just make it up yourself. It's not really what the Buddha taught. But all these things, they do come from the original Pali. Especially after doing that at the Sri Lankan temple, where some of you have studied Pali. So you have to say, this is right from the teachings of the Buddha. From stillness, you see things as they truly are. So the job of meditation is learning how to be still. Why can't one be still? Again, because one holds things. So the whole part of meditation is learning how to let things go, to put them down. Now, simile number one. For those of you who think, you're too busy to meditate. I don't know how you found, you know, 2 or 3 days off work. I must be a very big drain on the economy in Toronto, taking all you people away from your work, or when you said you are sick for the next 2 or 3 days. There's a few doctors here, you know, so they should probably know that you are lying. But anyhow, you've taken 2 or 3 days off work, which is very, very good. A lot of people, they don't meditate, number one, because they don't even have time to meditate. If you're very busy, then you've got no choice, you have to meditate. There's one disciple who told me, he meditates every day for 1 hour, every day for 1 hour, except when he's busy. When he's busy, he meditates for 2 hours. But that's a very wonderful thing to say. Because when he's busy, that's why he needs that extra hour of meditation. To understand why, the second water simile. And you said that you had a friend who was at Imperial College. I gave this talk at Imperial College about this time last year. And I held up my glass of water and asked, how heavy is a glass of water? Now, Imperial College in London is like basically a science college. Very smart people there. And one person put up their hand and said, maybe about 850 grams. I said, that's not what I meant. How heavy does it feel? Because the longer I hold it, the heavier it feels. If I hold it like this after 2 minutes, my arm will start to ache. After about 4 minutes, I'll be in pain. After 10 minutes, I'll be in agony. And a very stupid monk. And I say this because you're stupid people. And I'll tell you why in a moment. When this gets too heavy to hold comfortably, what should I do? Put it down. I don't throw it away. Just put it down for 1 minute, 2 minutes, maybe 3 minutes at most. So my arm can relax. And once I pick it up again, it actually, honestly, it feels much lighter. It's exactly the same weight of water, but because my arm is rested, the experience is, it's not a burden. It's easy to carry. Hopefully many of you got the metaphor. This is your work, your studies, your responsibilities. The only reason why people get stressed is not because they've got so many responsibilities or duties. The only reason they get stressed in life is because they hold it for too long. That's why I said you're stupid if you get stressed out at work. Because you don't know how to put it down. To let it go for a few minutes. Now when I first told that story, I've been telling that story for many years. Actually, I probably told that story the last time I was here. But you know, most of the people who come to Buddhist temples are getting old. So the stories I told last time I was here, I'm gambling, betting on that you're so old you've probably forgotten those by now. So that's why I don't come to Toronto every year, otherwise I'd have to get new stories. It's much more fun teaching old people because they forget the jokes you told them last week. So, I told that just over 2 years ago at a World Computer Conference where I gave a keynote address. And that was such a popular simile, it next appeared in the Australian newspaper, that's the National Daily in Australia. From there it migrated to the Australian Stock Exchange website, because many traders get a lot of stress. And from there it migrated to the Harvard Business School blog. So, Harvard Business School, they get all the information from me. Well, some anyway. And what they said is they called it, because they had to change the language to make it appropriate to the audience, they called this an investment in time. If you call it an investment, people who read your Harvard Business School blog get interested. Call it meditation in a way. So this is an investment. By putting it down for a few minutes, you're actually saving time. It means that what you do afterwards, you do it in less time and greater efficiency, simply because your brain is rested. So anyone who learns how to meditate, when you feel that your brain is getting tired, when it's not performing to its optimal potential, you rest. Meditate, or even if you can't meditate, listen to soft music or go for a walk for 5 or 10 minutes. And you find when you put the glass down, the burden down for a few seconds or a few minutes, afterwards your brain is clear, which means you produce more work of a higher quality in a shorter time. That's really important for people who are studying. If you're studying and look at that computer or book when you're tired, you are wasting your time. Nothing goes in, and you're just getting more and more tired. Take a break, rest, and after you rest, you pick up that book again, and you're using your brain efficiently. You can read it, remember it, and even if you have to produce, say, write a letter, you write a much better letter in a shorter time, because your brain is efficient. That's why it is an investment in time. Half an hour at lunchtime, said a Harvard Business School blog, you get back in the afternoon, you get, say, 3 hours work done in 2 hours, of very high quality too. Now I'm saying that to market meditation. If you really are busy, that's when you need to rest more, to be able to carry the burden without getting stressed. Not only that, if you can meditate more so you're not so stressed at work or university, it means when you come home, you're not so grumpy with the person you live with. That's why many people send their husbands to my meditation retreat. Come on, you sort them out. I don't know. They're a pain in the neck to do. And the same with their wives as well. Simply because it does work. So we need power to learn how to put the glass down, so we can rest and relax. At the very least, we can actually do much better in our careers. No stress. And therefore, not get so angry. You know one of the greatest reasons why people are angry in the modern world? It's because they're so stressed out. They've lost their resilience. When you're really relaxed, someone can call you a pig. And you just smile and go oink. But if you've just had it up to here all day with stress, they call you anything and you will sort of burst out with anger. One of the reasons why people are angry, they've got a short fuse, as they say, simply because we're so tired. And it's also one of the reasons why many people are depressed. They run out of energy and inspiration and joy in their minds because they don't know how to rest. It's another reason why they get sick. They haven't learned how to rest. So their brain gets so tired, it gets angry, depressed, and even causes sickness in the body. So this is really important, we learn how to do this. So okay, there we go. Putting the cup down, at least the stillness. Let's go have a lot of difficulties in your life, such as depression, such as stress, gets you greater performance. It's a win-win in all situations. So how do you do it? What should be the most simple thing in the whole world, which is doing nothing? People just haven't got an idea how to do it. Whilst a man rang one of the monks in the temple. "Venerable sir, can you please come to my house to do a blessing?" And the priest said, "Sorry, I'm busy today." And the caller said, "Venerable sir, what are you doing?" And he said, "I'm doing nothing." That's what monks are supposed to do. You know, meditating, relaxing, doing nothing. And the caller knew enough about Buddhism, okay, very good. And he put down the phone. That's what monks are supposed to do. Lead by example. Rest, relax, meditate, put things down, stop doing things. But anyway, the caller rang the next day. Got through to the same monk at the temple. Remember I called yesterday, I need you to come to my house to do a blessing. And the monk said, "I'm sorry, I'm busy." "So what are you doing today?" said the caller. "Just the same as yesterday, I'm doing nothing today." "That's what you were doing yesterday," said the caller. "Yes," said the monk, "but I'm not finished yet." But a little story. Please get nothing out of the way first of all, and then do all your chores. That's why I say, why do you all live in these beautiful houses? Some of them are like museums. And you're so stressed out, and you get angry and shout at each other. Wouldn't it be better to live in a mess of a house, but have fun together? So, when you go home this evening, after this first day of the retreat, before you do all the washing in the kitchen, please count how many plates and cups and saucers are clean. Compare them to the number of cups, plates and saucers which are dirty. And if the clean ones outnumber the dirty ones, then quit while you're ahead. Why is it we always want to get these things out of the way first? And then we'll meditate. So that's one of the first things. How do we do it? We've got to give it priority to make sure it is important. And in order to emphasize this a little bit more, to give another story, because people remember the stories and the jokes. Everything else which I say, they usually forget. That's why I have to keep coming back and saying it next time, or the other monks still say the same thing. This was a story of what we really mean. I'll get this out of the way first, and then I'll meditate. It's a story of the monkey mind. Many of you may have heard in meditation the idea of a monkey mind, and for most teachers they call it a mind which always runs around from one thing to another thing to another, just like a monkey swings from one branch to another branch on a tree, hardly ever being still. The monkey mind is the opposite of stillness, but there's more to the monkey mind than just being restless, never being able to rest on one thing. Because on a wayside day in a big temple somewhere in Sri Lanka, a monkey came to the temple, because on Vaisakh Day, that's the holiest day of the Buddhist year, thousands of people come to the temple. And they bring so much food to the monks and to themselves. And there's so much food there, and there's so much confusion. It's inevitable that someone will drop a banana or a mango, and that'd be the monkey's lunch. Or maybe they just put it down somewhere and go talking to their friends, and again, the monkey could steal it. So the monkey went to the temple to get a banana or a mango, because he knew there'd be many people there that day. But as he was just waiting for someone to drop some fruit, he heard the priest in the temple give a sermon. And he heard the priest say, "Monkey mind." And the monkey thought, "He's talking about me." So the monkey started to listen. And as he listened, the monkey was so upset, because the priest was saying, "A monkey mind is bad, and you should get rid of your monkey mind. Stop running around from one thing to another. Stay still. A monkey mind is a bad mind." When the monkey heard that, he was very angry. "What do you mean a monkey mind is bad? is terrible, something you should get rid of. Monkey minds are okay, I've got one myself. What are these human beings saying this for? This is defamation. I'm not going to stand for this, not in today's present age. You know, we can't discriminate according to gender or race or anything else. Why do they discriminate against species? This is not on, I'm going to do something about this. He was so angry when somebody said a monkey's mind was really bad. So he swam straight back to the jungle where he lived and told all his friends, and sooner or later the whole troop of monkeys were jumping up and down. Yeah, we can't stand for this. This is wrong. We can't have this. We're going to do something about this. And they're all jumping up and down, making such a loud noise that the leader of that troop of monkeys said, "Stop it, you. That is the monkey mind. Jumping up and down, complaining." And all the monkeys realized their leader was right. They all hung their heads. Oh, what bad karma it is to be a monkey, because we've all got monkey minds. But then one of the monkeys said, "There's a solution. There's a solution, because I've also been to that temple, and I heard the monk say, if you meditate, you can overcome the monkey mind and be peaceful." So all the monkeys started jumping up and down. "Yeah, yeah, let's meditate. Yeah, we want to meditate. Yeah, let's meditate. Good idea, let's meditate." You know where the symphony is going, don't you? You know, I'm the monk, the leader, and you're all the little, "Yeah, let's meditate today. You're going to come here to meditate for 3 days. Yeah, let's do it. Ooh, ooh, yeah, let's..." So then they said, "But how do we meditate?" And the leader said, "Look, I've actually seen those human beings, what they do. You know what they do? They find a nice cushion, even though some of them are already so fat they don't really need a cushion. And they put the right leg over the left leg, the right foot..." "No, don't do it, you're not a monkey, this is how monkeys do it." "The right leg over the left leg, the right paw over the left paw, straighten their backs, heads down, close their eyes, and watch their breath." So all the monkeys said, "Well, we've got to get a cushion first of all." So they all went into the forest, got some grass, some leaves, put into these nice cushions. And I see suddenly they've got these huge cushions. So suddenly the monkeys, such a high lot of grass, they kept falling off it. But nevertheless, they all got themselves a cushion. Then they sat on their cushions. Right leg over the left leg, right paw over the left paw, heads down, closed eyes, and they started watching their breathing. That was the first time in the history of our world monkeys meditated. Not for long though. "Excuse me, excuse me," said one of the monkeys after 1 minute. "So I've been thinking. I've been thinking, because that's what you do during meditation. You've got your eyes closed and thinking this, thinking that. I've been thinking, don't you remember, for lunch, we were going to go and raid the banana plantation?" So even though you may be meditating here, you're thinking, "What should we do for lunch? We've got to get all this stuff over for the priests, the Rajam Brahma, everything else." "So look, I can't stop thinking about that. So let's get off our meditation cushions. Let's raid the banana plantation first. Get all the bananas, put them into a heap. We won't eat them yet, we just collect them. So I'll get that out of the way so I can meditate without having to think about anything." All the other monks said, "Yeah, I will think about the same thing. Great idea." So they all got up and swam over to the local plantation, stole lots and lots of bananas, because all the people were at the temple, and brought the bananas back, put them in a big heap, and then went back to their cushions. Sitting on their cushions, right leg over the left leg, right paw over the left paw, back straight, chin tucked in, close their eyes, watching their breath. Breathing in, breathing out. Breathing in, breathing out. "Excuse me," said another monkey. "I've been thinking. You know, before we eat those bananas, we'll have to peel them first. Can we just get out of the way first of all? Once it's out of the way, now then we can go back to meditate." "Yeah, good idea. We were thinking about the same thing," said the other monkeys. So they all got up and peeled all the bananas. They never had them yet, just peeled them, put them into a big heap again, went back to their cushions. Right leg over the left leg, right over the left paw, back straight, chin tucked in, close eyes and watch them breathe. Breathing in, breathing out, breathing in. Excuse me! Said another monkey, I've been thinking. You know what people do, they think, 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 think. I've been thinking, before we eat those bananas, we have to put them in our mouth first. So, let's put them in our mouth, we won't eat them yet, just put them in our mouth, to get that out of the way, so we can meditate with nothing to think about. Good idea, we've been thinking the same. So they all got up, they all put bananas in their mouth each, and never had them yet, just put it in. Of course, there's always about three or four monkeys, put two bananas in. One put three in their mouth. You just watch who eats this at lunchtime, you find out who those monkeys are. But with the bananas in their mouth, they went back to their cushions, right leg over the left leg, right paw over the left paw, back straight, chin tucked in, eyes closed, and meditated. Of course, they never meditated. Once all the monkeys had closed their eyes, they all ate their bananas. Then they got up and left. And that was the end of meditation for monkeys. Now, I hope you remember that story. If you say, I'll get this out of the way first, and then I'll meditate, you have a monkey mind. Get meditation out of the way first, and then you can do all that other stuff. The important part of that story is giving value to stillness and taking it away from all these other plans and memories. Because you'll find in life what's really important to you is what will stay in your mind. What's not so important will disappear. So why is it you think so much? Because you give thinking more importance and stillness. It's also why sometimes people have to have a cancer or know somebody who's got a cancer or have some other sickness when they really have to meditate, or else when meditation becomes really important and they do a lot of it. But it's not so important. You think, oh no, I'll get all these other things out of the way first and then we'll meditate. Which is why I said at the very beginning, stillness. Meditation enhances so much of your life. You find you have more time for other things, not less. So you have to give importance to being still. In particular, I already said putting down the glass. It's very easy for me to say that, just let things go, put them down. But you guys, you can't do that. So you have to put down glasses in stages. The first thing you have to do to let go, to put things down, is to let go of what we call the past and the future. Especially the past. Why do we carry all these things which happened such a long time ago? Why are we so upset? Why do we allow other people to upset us? Someone calls you, listen, I said pig before, someone calls you a camel. What do you do? If you are dumb, you start thinking, they call me a camel. I am not a camel. They've got no right to call me a camel. When you remember that past three times, you realize they've called you a camel three more times. Every time you remember it, you allow them to call you a camel another time. They call me a camel, you remember, and they call you a camel again. Why do you do that? It's absolutely stupid. They can call me a camel once, and that's it. I'm not going to think about it again. They're going to call me the greatest monk who ever lived. I said, oh yes, I remember that. Praise gives you a big heart, doesn't give you a big head. So why do you keep remembering the bad stuff of the past? It's absolutely crazy. Now I know there's a few psychologists or training psychologists here, and I must tell you that in my city in Perth, I don't know how many psychologists actually they told me they get the permission to teach by going to university and getting that piece of paper, their degree, their certificate. All the practical stuff they learn in the Buddhist temple. And this is one of those stories which is very practical. To let go of the past. Many psychologists know that if you have some past memories, if before you let them go, you have to acknowledge them. Bring to the surface, first of all. Just realize this actually happened to you. So one of the best ways of letting go of the past is first acknowledging it. And that best way of acknowledging is writing it down on a piece of paper. Now that's standard psychology, and this is where my method adds to what's already known in psychology. It starts with the type of paper you write down all the bad memories and experiences of your past. Who's cheated you, who's hurt you, abused you, even sexual abuse, physical abuse, cheated you in your work, let you down. All those things write down on a piece of paper. But please choose toilet paper and write it down in brown ink. And that way you'll get the association that this is shit stuff which you should not keep. How many of you wipe your arse and put a piece of paper in your pocket to use the next time? I know we should recycle. I know that we should make sure that we don't take down too many forests by using too much paper. So please, in the temple, please use both sides of the toilet paper to cut tangles. No, that's going too far. But the association of writing your bad memories down on toilet paper in brown ink is the important part of the psychology. To realize this past is not valuable. It's something which you should regard the same way as the usual brown stuff which goes on toilet paper. So having written it down in brown ink on toilet paper, the toilet paper is very cheap. All that bad stuff which has happened to you in a whole row, maybe two or three you think, doesn't matter. Cheap, write it down. And then read it. Write it down very carefully, read it. And having read it, then you do the next part of the ceremony. Which you all know, you're right ahead of me. You take it to where toilet paper usually goes, and you do the letting go ceremony. You put it in the bowl, and in the little button on the top you press, whoosh! And that toilet paper with the brown ink with all those bad memories goes down and disappears into the sewers where it belongs. You let it go. Now, when I first told that to a psychology conference, they were all writing it down. Because my goodness, it does work. It's association, acknowledging association. This is not valuable than doing some ceremony to reinforce the mental renunciation or letting it go. It's not valuable to keep that bad stuff in the past. So why do you keep it? It is because we really think it's important. If we can take away its value by associating it with shit, it goes. So that's one way of letting go of the past. But then we have letting go of the future. That's one of the other things which stops us being still, which keeps too many waves on our mind. So your future. Where is your future being made? When is the only time you can do anything about your future? Right now. It's obvious. We keep forgetting it. Every time you project your mind into the future, what's going to happen, what are you going to do, how are you going to do it, how are you going to say, that means you are neglecting the place your future is being made right now. Many of you are Buddhists. Those who are Buddhists, by the end of this retreat, anyway, and you know the law of karma. The law of karma is very simple. What you do right now is what creates your future. If what you do right now is what they call good karma or wholesome karma, then you know your future is going to be great. So really, if you are concerned about your future, make good karma right now, in this moment. In other words, the present moment is where life is happening. So stop going off into the future so much, planning it. So working it all out. Okay, we have to make some plans. But you don't have to make so many. Because I say this, because look, if you don't make any plans, things go wrong, don't they? If you don't plan to get here in time, you become late. If you don't work it all out, you won't have lunch. So if you don't plan, things go wrong. But then you should realize by now, if you do plan, they go wrong anyway. Either way, they go wrong. So you've got a choice. They're going to go wrong. You plan or you don't plan. It's much more fun not planning and I'm going wrong than planning and I'm going wrong. So understanding that, I know they're going to go wrong anyway, so I don't plan to have a good time before they go wrong. We plan far too much. Why is that? Because we're afraid. The more fearful we are of the future and how we're going to cope, the more we have to plan everything to the last detail. And those people who plan to the last detail are called control freaks. And that's the opposite of meditation. That's concentration, being control freak. Instead, you don't need to be a control freak to be successful. In fact, control freaks are the least successful in the whole world. If you're fearful, you will plan a lot. If you're wise, you realize you don't need to plan. You can adapt. Because you're not afraid of how you're going to cope in the future. You'll be okay. So, please remember, all your planning is becoming you're afraid of just being in the present moment, just letting things evolve, and having confidence. You'll always be able to adapt no matter what happens. I almost missed my flight. The first part of the flight coming into Toronto, on the way to the airport late Sunday night, which was Sunday afternoon, I think, over here. Late at night, in the dark, in the forest, south of the metropolitan area, I can't go down. No taxis, no telephone. We were in big trouble. Did I get worried? Oh no, never mind. Just don't go to Toronto, that's all. It's a big deal. I'm not worried. Because any time you make these plans, they're only tentative. That's why if you do make a plan, or you could say if conditions are right, then I'll come back. Give yourself an option out. Because you can't predict the future, you don't know what's going to happen. So maybe you're not afraid. It doesn't matter, whatever happens, you'll be able to do something or whatever happens. Is it the best times of your life when things have gone wrong? Totally unexpected, mistakes have happened, and then you come across some really interesting, wonderful, life-changing experiences as a result. So if you plan the future, you're missing the adventure of life. Or you just be open to change, knowing you can handle it, and knowing it's the most interesting thing you can possibly do. So, don't be afraid of the future. And then you can be in the present moment. When in the present moment, life is so much more fun. You don't have to worry about what's going to happen next. You don't have to be burdened and constantly hurt by people who have hurt you once and you're allowed to hurt you again and again and again throughout the whole of your life. Please let it go. And then you can be at least still in the present moment. Just being here. Now in each of these stages of meditation, I'm going to be teaching over the next three days, there are three levels to every stage. Now really, there are not three levels, there are stages of meditation, but you've got to give that to people just to make them more interesting, because people are not what they like, levels and stages. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1A, 1B, 1C. If you put it that way, quantify it, people feel very comfortable. If I do so, just let it all go. They can't do that. So the three stages of present moment awareness. Number one, recognizing what I mean. You know, people, they just don't know what the present moment is. I told them, just be in the present moment. So what do you mean? When people first told me that, I realized just how crazy our world is. Always running off into the future, never being here. So much we're not really quite sure what we mean by being in the present moment. That is so sad. So number one, recognize what we mean by the present moment. And number two, be familiar with it. When you're familiar with it, you get to know it so well, you can soon get to the third stage where you can just relax in the present moment. You're at ease with it. Just like when you go to a new job, a new office. When you first go there, you don't know where the office is. You've got to find your way around. You've got to recognize your place. After a while, you become familiar with everybody who works there. And then you can be at ease. You can relax and be yourself. That's the same with present moment awareness. As it is with the next stage, which is silence. That's why I paused. Because again, some people say, but I can't stop thinking. Say, yes you can. No, I can't. So I said, I'll prove it to you. Because I was a scientist before, so these days it's very tough teaching Buddhism, because people say, prove it. Rather than prove reincarnation. I said, come here, I'm going to kill you, my friend. Unfortunately, I can't do that. So, anyway, to prove silence to people, I'm now going to prove it to you that you can stop thinking. I'm also going to give you the experience so you can recognize what silence really is. So as I'm doing this little demonstration, I want you not just to listen to the words which I'm speaking, but also listen to the reaction in your own mind. Listen to my words, but also how you react inside. Because as I'm speaking, you will begin to notice some pauses between my words. In those spaces, what was going on in your mind? There it was again. You were silent. You weren't thinking. Because you never knew when I was going to start speaking again. You were actually waiting in this moment with silent awareness. How easy it is. So I'm going to put the microphone down. You keep silent for the rest of the day. Even though you're that easy. Now, the reason why we're not silent, we can't let go of the thoughts again, fear again. Because we assume if we think things out in life, Again, we're going to be safe and avoid all our problems. Be honest, you've tried thinking for many years. Has it ever solved your problems? So how about trying silence instead? Give it value. And the classic story I love saying about silence is from the Tao tradition. Lao Tzu, one of the founders of Taoist tradition. He had a monastery. He would go on a walk every evening. He would take one disciple every evening to accompany him on his walk. But there was a very strict rule. No one was allowed to speak on the walk. A new disciple was on a walk with a master, and they came to a ridge in the mountains at sunset. It was such a beautiful sunset, the student couldn't help himself. He spoke. Wow, what a beautiful sunset. He'd broken the rule. Lao Tzu turned around without saying a word, went back to the monastery, and then said, that young man can never ever go on a walk with me ever again throughout his whole life. When his friend said, that's a bit too strict, he only made one sentence. Not a life ban, even murder you only get 40 years. But, 30 years? It's always in Canada. Over the border, it's now 12, 16, 20 lifetimes. Crazy. But anyway, it must be actually in the US judicial system, they must believe in reincarnation. That's why they give 40, 50 life sentences. Anyway, back to Lao Tzu. Oh, what's wrong anyway with saying what a beautiful sunset? And that's when the master replied, when my student said what a beautiful sunset, he wasn't watching the sunset anymore. He was only watching the words. If you understand the meaning of that, you understand why silence is much closer to the truth than words. She wasn't watching the silence, she was just watching the words. No matter how many people live their life watching words, and they never actually see the real things. They don't know silence. If you really want to see the truth, shh, be silent. Otherwise, you're just watching the words. There was a professor at a local university, McGill University, not local. I think I can say McGill because, is anyone here from Montreal? Oops. Okay, McGill University of Montreal, a professor of philosophy, and he heard that a new 5-star restaurant had just opened up in Montreal with a 5-star Michelin rated chef from France. And this guy loved his food so much, he made a reservation. But when he ran up the reservation, the professor of philosophy heard that there was a waiting list of almost 2 months. That's how popular the restaurant was, but never mind. He made a reservation for 2 months in the future. When that date came up in his calendar, that evening, he dressed in a fine suit, appeared in the restaurant, had to show his ID so they could check, yes, sir, you have a reservation tonight. And so they took him to his table. And of course, it was a 5-star restaurant. The interior decoration was exquisite. Everything was just so well appointed. And fact is, like the best interior decorator had helped in this Michelin 5-star restaurant. And they took him to the table, and soon after, a butler appeared. At least it was, looked like a butler, supposed to be a waiter, with tail, spine dress, a nice white tie, and gave him the menu. You wouldn't believe the menu. It was on thick parchment, not like you see at McDonald's, really thick paper. And the way it was written was like in Chinese calligraphy. The sort of thing you'd expect to see in a museum, not in a restaurant, in gold lettering. With a nice red border on the outside. And the professor said, thank you. And then he proceeded to eat the menu, pay his bill, and left. Because the professor, he did not know the difference between menus and food. And I think you get the point. You know, there are many people who study Buddhism. They know Pali back to front. They can teach the Abhidhamma. But they don't know Buddhism. They just eat the menu. And they've never actually tasted the food. Well, that might be a bit cheeky, but that's so true. So the thoughts, the names, the menus. Let that go. So you can be still. And just watch things. Of course, there's many other things you have to let go of. But those are the two main ones to begin with. To let go of time. No past, no future. Just be in the present moment. Family in the present moment is really important here. It's a place of peace. A place where your future is being made. Where your health is being made in the future. And value the silence. Only in silence will you see things as they truly are. Not as you think they were. And that is the beginning of meditation. Letting things go so you can be still. There's much more to go. People say, what about the breath like those monkeys? That will come later. If you ever try watching the breathing without establishing enough present moment awareness or silence, you will not be able to maintain your awareness. It will just disappear. You haven't got the foundations right. You haven't prepared yourself. Present moment awareness and silence first, please. Once you have that, the breath is so easy. You've got to establish basic stillness before you can go on to a deeper stillness, the stillness of your body, by watching the breath. But that's going to come later. You're here for 3 days. Much more is to come. And also, just like that monkey simile, you don't have to sit on a cushion made of grass. Wise meditators, the creme de la creme, they're the ones who meditate on chairs. Congratulations, sir. Congratulations all over there. You are the wise ones. All the rest of you, we try to meditate, oh my knee aches, oh my bottom aches, oh. You're not here to learn how to sit on the floor. You're here to learn how to make your mind peaceful. That's why we have chairs. You know what chairs are for? For sitting on. It does not matter. You can get very deep meditation, actually much deeper meditation, if you're not comfortable on the floor. If you sit on a chair. As for me, I am more comfortable sitting on sort of the ground here. Just like here, you drove me here. I don't like dangling even my feet over the car of the seat in the car. I like sitting cross-legged in the car because I'm just more comfortable like this. I often thought that for Asians, the traditional Asians, we could have an airline where everybody sits on the floor. That way you can have about 2 levels. You get many more people in there. In a cut-price airline, you fit more people in. No, we don't need these seats. But anyway, that's my business plan for the airline. To follow it up. But it doesn't matter how you're sitting, as long as you're comfortable. Except for one thing about your posture. You know, there's sometimes in Tibetan tradition you put your hands on your knees, sometimes you put it in your lap, sometimes I'm crossing my arms. It doesn't matter what your arms do, as long as they're happy. Same as your legs, you can sit this position, that position, full lotus, half lotus, quarter lotus, I don't care what you do, as long as your legs are happy. Your back can be straight at the beginning against the wall, I don't care, as long as it's comfortable. In fact, Somebody sent me an article, because Klaus is a scientist, they keep on sending me articles about modern science, and one of those articles was the most comfortable position for the back. The healthiest position is about 15 degrees from the vertical, which is what we have on chairs. Because chairs have evolved like Darwinian natural selection. What you select, you know, from IKEA or whatever short stores you get your chairs from, the ones which you select and you're comfortable in, they're the ones which survive. And so those chairs have had a natural selection over the last over how many years. It feels comfortable. And that is actually science to show that's the most healthiest for your body. So if you have sore backs, sit in the chair for goodness sake, lean back. But the only part of your posture which is vital for deep meditation, which so many people neglect, it's not where you put your legs or your hands or your back straight or lean back. It's not what you're doing with your eyes should be closed, obviously, that's the best. The most important part of your posture is this, your mouth. So make sure when you start meditation, the corners are turned up. This is no joke, you have a much better meditation if you start meditation with a smile. If you put as much attention to that part of your posture as to anything else. Because if you start miserable, as if meditation is like going to the dentist. I apologize to any dentists here, but this is a natural way people think of dentists. Then you're not going to have good meditation. What you put in the beginning is what you get throughout the whole meditation. But please smile. At the very least, out of compassion for me, who has to look at you all when I open my eyes. So have a little smile in place and meditation is much easier. It's again basic psychology. And that way in the present moment, and you're silent, you value those two things and you find your meditation will start going much, much deeper. Later on I'll talk about other parts of meditation. But, according to the program, it's going to be about 15 minutes for a few questions and answers about what I've just been talking about. So, questions about what I've been talking about, the basic stages of meditation, posture, present moment awareness and silence. Who's got a question they want to ask? When's the last time I was here? 3 years ago? Three years ago. I'm sure I told this story 3 years ago. Because it's so hard getting a question from people when you're talking in a modern world. People are so embarrassed. So I'm going to embarrass those people who don't like asking questions by telling the story from the Mahakamalibhanga Sutra of the Majjhima Nikaya. You can look this up for yourself, it's there. This is teachings of the Buddha. A man came to see the Buddha and asked him the law about karma and reincarnation. In particular, why is it that some people are wealthy while other people are poor? It doesn't really depend on how hard you work. Some of you work really, really hard and still you don't make it. It's a struggle to survive. While others hardly do any work at all. They win the lottery, their business flourishes, just money comes to them. What is a karmic cause for being wealthy? And the Buddha gave such a good answer, you know, but I won't say it here, the karmic cause for wealth in your future life. He asked a second question. He said, I've also noticed, you know, that some people are really beautiful while other people are ugly. What is the karmic cause, you know, for people being ugly? You may have noticed when I said this story, especially when I mentioned the word ugly, I looked at the karma in front of me. The reason was because I once said this story in Singapore. It just by chance I just happened to be looking at one girl when I mentioned the word ugly. My goodness, did she complain. Why did you mention the word ugly when you were looking at me? It's even more dangerous as a monk when you mention the word beautiful and happen to be looking at someone. They get a wrong idea. So that's why I was looking at the floor when I said those two words. But anyway, The Buddha gave the reason why some people are born ugly and other people are born beautiful. And then he asked the third question, which is the reason why I tell this story. He said, why are some people intelligent, but other people have such a hard time at school and university? You know, you may have been to college yourself, and there's these JoJos who just say, don't go to any lectures, or very few that don't do any studies, and then again, you know, first class honours, a double first, PhDs, a whole works, and it doesn't do any work. They're just naturally really smart. And others, you have to work so hard, extra tutorials, retake the exam two or three times before you pass. Why is it that some people are intelligent while other people are stupid? And the Buddha gave the reason. He said the karmic cause for stupidity, the lack of intelligence in your next life, is not asking questions in this life. Any questions? That's true, it actually says that. Yes, it always works, every time.
You talk about how to deal with fear of future, right?
Yeah, fear of the future.
Then how to deal with fear of height? It's deep in the subconsciousness.
Fear of height. Is it deep or deep subconscious? It's actually, what you do is you reprogram the mind. Because fear of heights, you're not fear of heights, you're fear of falling. Especially without a parachute. But as for me, I'm not afraid of heights at all. In fact, for me, the higher you are, the closer you are to the heavenly realms. Higher, the better for me. That's why when I heard this was a new temple here, it was two stories or three stories. I said, is there a penthouse up the top for the monks? But also, PR is looking after me. He's been telling many of his clients about how I overcame fear of flying. That's really high. And it was not just the fear of flying, but the terrorist attacks in those days. Those shoe bombers, underpack bombers. You know, they put bra bombers on one neck, I don't know what you're going to do, but it's so hard to protect against terrorists. And so because I fly so much, my students asked me once, aren't you afraid of flying? Because we are, anyway, can you please not fly so much? The more times you fly, the more chance there is that you, Ajahn Brahm, will be in an explosion at 30,000 or 40,000 feet. So quickly I reply, sir, I am not afraid at all of dying at 40,000 feet in an aircraft explosion. And the reason why I see three benefits in dying at 40,000 feet in an aircraft explosion. Suppose that was, you know, your grandma who died at 40,000 feet. First advantage is instant funeral ceremony. The cremation is instant. Have you ever arranged a funeral for your loved one? It takes, what do you do first of all? You've got to get a death certificate, then you've got to go to the funeral director or funeral home, and you've got to arrange what you need to do, the type of coffin. It's just a lot of psychological pressure, because you'll never get the cheapest coffin, because that will show you don't love, you know, your grandma. You can't afford the most expensive, but you're going to do it anyway, because you only got one grandma. Oh gee, this is really expensive. Then you've got to arrange time off work and get all the relations and friends, especially relations from overseas, get them all over there, get them a place to stay, feed them. It's such a pain just to organise a funeral ceremony. Cremation in aircraft explosion. Instantaneously, no worries, all done on the spot. Even the sprinkling of the ashes is done for you as well. Number two benefit. How expensive a funeral ceremony is in Toronto? $7,000 to $8,000? 15.
Wow,
that's an arm and a leg. Actually, much more than the person in the coffin. But if your grandma dies in aircraft exposure at 40,000 feet, not only do you not have to pay $15,000, you actually get money back from the airline company. At the end of the day, you make a profit out of a grandma's day. But the best is the third. The third benefit is the best of all three. If your grandma dies at 40,000 feet, doesn't matter what she's done in her whole life, she's so close to heaven, it's easy to go the rest of the way. So actually, how do you deal with fear? It's often finding out what you're really afraid of. It's not a price, it's a falling. And seeing the benefits.
To die.
I have to die.
Yeah.
It's a great benefit, dying. Because look, old age really sucks. Have you ever been to old people's home? Do you want to go there? No way. So please go on a, next time you see sort of a terrorist or someone who appears on a terrorist, get on the flight with them. It might be your lucky day.
You need to bring us our mind. That death is beautiful, right?
Exactly. It's reconditioned. Because a lot of things we're afraid of, when we look at them clearly, there's nothing to be afraid of at all. You know what it really is, a lot of time, many prisoners are afraid of being released from jail, especially being in prison for a long time. 20, 30 years, they're terrified of going outside. Even though it's freedom, it's, you can do whatever you want, it's happiness. A lot of times what we're afraid of doing, when we examine it, it's actually wonderful. It's a fear of letting go. The biggest fear is the fear of losing control. But look, losing control is wonderful. I do it all the time. That's why in my latest book, which is on sale in the foyer, isn't it yet? The Art of Disappearing?
Yes.
In my foreword to that book, I said that's the whole purpose of meditation. It's actually to lose control, to let go, to be free. So I said, this is how to be a loser. So all monks, we're all losers. And an enlightened monk or an enlightened nun, they're the biggest loser. So I'm going to wish you all, may all get lost. But in the best possible way. So next question, sorry. Did I answer the question, sort of?
Yeah.
Now, I will recondition you. Stay for 3 days and you'll be totally rewired.
Yeah,
there's one over there, ladies, and then 2, 3, 4. Yeah, that's sure. Okay, Theo, you can sit close by. You can rush around and get fit.
My question is, as you meditate and your mind becomes still, sometimes it's harder to anticipate. Is that a normal phenomenon, or is that something that you don't understand the problem in life?
It will be harder to anticipate. It will be easier to adapt. Become more adaptable. And that's why I also teach business schools that modern business survives if it can turn on a dime. Because the market opportunities, innovation, it comes so fast these days. If you can't adapt almost immediately, you're going to lose the opportunities. So there's not so much anticipation, except anticipation that the future is unknown. You know it's going to be unknown. So you're able to adapt. And that adaptability is a secret of success in life and also into business. Be able to change when situations change. If you keep to your fixed plan, you're just missing opportunities. That's why. What was the key book that was 5, 6 years ago, a very little volume, Who Moved My Cheese? You know, that sort of book which was very famous in business circles. About two mice, they'd always get the cheese in the same place every day, and one day the cheese wasn't there. So one mouse kept on waiting there, who moved my cheese, why they moved my cheese, the other mouse went somewhere else where the cheese was. They could adapt to different markets, different strategies, innovation.
I'm a physician, so sometimes you have to anticipate what the next medicine is going to be and so on and so forth. Does that change, like if you meditate a lot and you are in the present, would that affect the way that you do things?
Of course it does, yes. Number one is because when you're not dividing your time between the present and the future, mm-hmm. when you're more in the present moment, you're actually observing more symptoms in the patient. You're right there with them, rather than thinking about what you have to do next. You're more fully here. Therefore, you're far more efficient. Mm-hmm.
If, what about my treatment? For instance, like, you have planned ahead, right?
Only so far. Because you know that you plan a treatment, but it's always provisional to see how they respond to that medication or that treatment. If it doesn't work, you've got to change almost immediately. So you've got to be adaptable. Plans should be so rubbery, you can bend them backwards. Rather than having these things you have to do, be adaptable, intuitive, you'd be far better, doctor. So it's over here, and then over the back over there afterwards. There you go.
Thank you. I started watching your videos on YouTube and they were very, very beneficial. So my question is, I kind of envy those monks who are around you, who like, you can teach directly. Like. So the question is, how can someone, like being remote in Canada, like learn from you like in the best way, in the most efficient way?
The answer is my brain. Can I say about who moved my cheese? Go to where cheese is.
Well, okay, if I don't go to my grave, then you go to the
grave. I can't come here.
That's the second time. you can't be in many places. All at the same time. Well, that's why we put these teachings on YouTube. Well, the internet. So I was talking earlier about universities. Soon, great universities in the world are not going to be campuses, they're going to be websites. Because it's obvious that people just don't have the time to go and move into places and the infrastructure to have residences and lecture theatres where you just sit in your bedroom or your office. And get a lecture on computer online and have tutorials online talking about doing experiments with robots online. So that is actually coming. So the Cyber Temple is here already with YouTube. So you don't need to have a teacher present here in Toronto or anywhere. And it's great that if you don't like the talk, you can just press delete. Instead, if you're here sitting in the front, you're in big trouble, because if you go out, you feel embarrassed in the middle of the talk. The internet's great. You can actually sit on a comfortable chair and have a cup of coffee while you listen to the talk. You can even listen to it on the toilet. It's actually good to listen to it on the toilet, especially if you have constipation, because you all teach you how to let go. There you go, relax, there you go. It really works.
So watching YouTube meditating, coming to this temple, this is like a wonderful temple, very nice teachings here.
Great.
Anything else that one can do, like what the monks do that we cannot do in, like, in this life?
Not spend more time. And also they just have everything which surrounds them is points to letting go. Even our possessions. Now they had just a trip overseas, many countries. So travelled all the way from Australia here to Toronto. How many suitcases did I arrive with, Pierre?
Zero.
Well, didn't I have any baggage at all?
No, just the bag.
The bag. Actually, it's over in the room over there. You see those little monk shoulder bags? That's my travel bag. So, see if you can lessen your possessions. Less is more. Live in a smaller house. Don't have a TV in every room. But maybe when you were young, I lived in a small apartment, which was tiny, with my brother and my mother and father. I thought I was poor, I was rich, because I didn't see my brother. I grew up in the same room as him. Really poor, but now we love each other to bits, because couldn't get away from each other. Mum and Dad, they were always there, you couldn't miss them. Because you were always tripping over each other, as it were, you got to know each other. Now people live in these huge homes. So many rooms, everyone's got their own room. So they never see each other. It's one of the problems in a modern society. We've got so wealthy that our houses are more like apartment blocks for our family. One child in one room, another child in another room. This is the wife's room, this is the husband's room. They hardly ever meet each other. So they miss the beauty of a family. Small apartment, smaller the better. Which means that you can meet each other, you love each other, you can't get away from each other. That's what heaven's all about. So yeah, you do argue, but you have to solve it because you can't escape. It also means you save a lot of money. And you can pay off your mortgage or whatever you pay to the loan for your house, you can pay it off when you're very, very young so you can retire early. So you don't need expensive things. In fact, expensive things just create too much stress. Keep it simple. That's one thing like a monk can teach. So I try and teach by example, by just coming along with one bag. And it's great, you come to customs in LA. Sir, so, don't have your baggage. This is it. So, that's what a monk should be. I said, oh, they've got so many bags. They're just going for the weekend. Crazy. So that's one thing you can do. Please be simple. It's also how you can also be environmentally sensitive to our planet. So you don't consume so much. That's a start. After that, you can shave off your hair. Give up your wife or girlfriend. Give all your money to the temple in Mississauga. On your big name. But you're not doing the right thing, wasn't it? No, it is simply. That's a good way to start. As you know, Joe, we do live too complicated. Too many big things. It's only to show off other people. This is my house, this is my car, see how much I've done in life. If this to a Buddhist or to a monk, it's a bit stupid. You should show off how small your house is. And we should start constantly, wow, PL's got this really small house, it's so advanced. Instead of like saying, oh, he's so wealthy, he's got a big house. I want one too. And keep it simple. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay, that's fine. There's a question over there. The lady over there was asking quite some time ago. Could you, Peter, would you like to do some more exercise? Okay. It's gone already.
No.
Yeah, I've answered it. It's passed. Okay.
It's about travelling on a plane.
About travelling on a plane. Okay, well, even though you didn't ask the question, I will still make your attention to the next one.
Okay, this is what happened. I was on this plane, and it was having engine trouble. I don't know what you call it, turbine or whatever it is. There was big problems. And they serve, the people are getting a bit antsy, so they serve a fairly stiff drink. That means a lot of people were drinking. I just thought I'd share that. It's funny because you'll be breaking the fifth precept just before you die.
Yeah, exactly. It reminds me of a story about this man who was on an airline sitting next to a parrot. This was actually in Air Asia in Flight Magazine. Because you know, do you have Air Asia visiting Toronto? Oh, not yet. It's a big airline in Asia and starting expanding to Europe and the United States. But their motto is, now everyone can fly. It's a very cheap airline. Anyway, this man was on one of these flights sitting next to a parrot. And when the flight attendant came round, the parrot said, give me a whiskey, you bitch. The flight attendant was shocked. You don't say such things to flight attendants. And the guy sitting next to him said, I have a cup of coffee, please. Yeah, yes, sir, yes, 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 sir. And so she went to the gallery a minute or later. She came back with a whiskey, you know, for the parrot. And the guy said, what about my cup of coffee? Oh, sorry, sir, I forgot. By that time, the parrot had downed the whiskey and said, give me another one, you cow. And the flight attendant was again so confused. She came back a few minutes later, you know, with another whiskey for the parrot, and forgot the coffee again. So the man thought, I better try the parrot method. So he shouted at the flight attendant, and get me that coffee, you cow! And the flight attendant disappeared. But this time, she came back with these two big male flight attendants who lifted both of them out of their seats, opened up one of the emergency exit doors and threw them both out, you know, 40,000 feet. And as they were both tumbling to their deaths, the parrot said to the man, you complain a lot for someone who can't fly. That's a nice joke about life. Okay. Okay, the question I think thank you.
My question is, when you are doing present moment awareness, not advance yet to do the breathing, not advance to shut up. You should be like talking about the present. That would be, I'm feeling this, I'm breathing that way, this came up, this came down. So before, you know, there is that intermediate state that is like a catch 22. You try to verbalize. So to focus in the present moment would be, well, talk about your feelings, the things that are coming up before you can shut up.
Yeah. In meditation especially, it's being aware of what's happening right now. Any feelings, the sound you're hearing, any thought which is going in on your mind, but right now. There's a simple exercise which I haven't given yet, which people find very helpful, especially to get into the present moment, and it's the simile of the two shopping bags. So what you do in the beginning of your meditation, you've got yourself in a reasonable, comfortable position, you close your eyes, you imagine yourself carrying two heavy shopping bags, like many people have done in the past. And you've been carrying them for so long, they're so heavy, that your shoulders ache and your arms hurt. You've all done that in the past, you know what I mean, so it's very easy to imagine, to visualize those two shopping bags with aching arms and shoulders. So you imagine that, imagine the ache, the pain, and imagine you look down upon those two shopping bags and you see on the outside of one, in the left hand is written the four letters, P-A-S-T, and on the one in the right hand, F-U-T-U-R-E. So you associate the one in your left hand with the past, the one in the right hand with your future. And in the right, left hand bag, everything, all your happy memories and bad experiences, even a moment ago, are in that shopping bag in your left hand. The past. It's so heavy because you've been carrying it for too long. And you imagine in your meditation your spine leaning to the left, so you can lower the shopping bag to the ground. And do it slowly. When it reaches the ground, the weight disappears. You uncurl the fingers from the handle, straighten up your back so your left arm is hanging loosely by the side. That helps you let go of the past. And then you have the shopping bag in your right hand, representing your future. Not just your fears, but also your dreams and hopes, all the wonderful plans of what you're going to do, you know, next summer or whatever. All that in the shopping bag, which because you've been carrying around 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, makes your heart weak and your mind hurt with fear and anxiety and all these other problems. And then you imagine yourself leaning to the right so you can lower that shopping bag to the ground. When it meets the ground, the burden is gone. You unclench your fingers, move your back straight, your arm up to the right side, so your right arm can rest and relax. And you look down as your arms are relaxing and resting, like your mind and your heart are relaxing. You look down, and there are the two shopping bags, your past and future. No one will ever take them away. You just put them down for a while. And where you're resting is the space between the past and the future. This place now. So by doing that little mental exercise, it helps let go of the past and the future. It helps you recognize what the present moment is. It also helps you recognize the reason you're doing this is because carrying around the past, worrying about the future, is a burden which stops your heart and mind being free and happy and strong. And also, you learn what we mean by the present moment, whatever's happening right now. So that's why this exercise is very effective. Okay, so we're now supposed to do a meditation. Is that correct, for half an hour? We're supposed to do it for an hour, but I told you about plans. I don't keep any plans, except the lunch plans. Otherwise, the monks will never let me come back again, which is 11 o'clock. So we're going to meditate half an hour. But first of all, have compassion and kindness for your bodies, because many of you are getting old. Ishan, you're getting old now, 21 soon. So out of compassion, please stand up.